Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, Tracy.
And welcome to 2015.
That's right. Here we are.
Yeah.
I knew it was coming.
I'd like to say Happy New Year.
Yes.
But we were woken this morning with some very tragic news.
Yes, a very very sad chapter in the art and design world, in the journalism world, and in many of our worlds. So we want to tell listeners that our topic today is the art and evolution of the comic strip. What we didn't know is how significantly appropriate it would be for today's show.
For this morning.
We'll be, careful to think about the people who lost their family members and the great talents and the risks that they took and the ultimate price that they paid. And yet it's still important to talk about this particular topic,
right?
And to dedicate what we have to say to them and their families today.
So for anyone who doesn't know, it was an attack on a Paris daily newspaper, a satirical newspaper, mm-hmm. That has been known in the past to poke fun at Muslim, mm-hmm. Islamic religion
and many other things.
Yes, yeah. Actually, all politicians, yeah. Religious leaders, all kinds of things. That's mm-hmm. their focus. But mm-hmm. And they have been the subject of attacks in the past.
Yes,
but to this morning, 12 people were killed.
Yes, it's a massacre.
And
it's
Charlie Hebdo.
Yes, Hebdo.
Hebdo.
Hebdo. A daily. Hebdo means daily.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and this is a tradition that. It's a European tradition, I think. I don't know that we in North America have those. I mean, we used to have Mad Magazine and which was satirical in nature, but not quite so hard hitting.
Right.
Yeah, more maybe silly.
Yeah.
You know.
But certainly in other parts of the world,
yes.
The political satire is huge.
Yes, yeah. And you know, 10 journalists. 2 police officers.
Yeah.
So it's hard to believe anybody could be that angry. And to me, it still comes down to how awful we are at finding ways to get along with people we don't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
lessons to be learned.
Mm-hmm.
So our topic today, mm-hmm. being the graphic arts industry, was inspired partly because in my cleansing, I found a very large collection of comic books that I had as a kid.
Because you recently moved, and when you move, you have to go through all of your things.
Yes, yes. And when I looked through them again, because every 12 years I do this, because I keep them for some crazy reason, they're certainly not in mint condition, so I don't know why I'm keeping them, but it's fun to look through them.
They're beautiful and colorful.
Yeah, and so what I realize is how much cultural content they have.
Absolutely.
And how, I don't know, I they're really indicative of the time. And mm-hmm. in a way that makes it a real high art,
mm-hmm.
because that's what we can do with art. We can look back at certain times when art was created and say, boy, that was really showing us this about our culture. And
it's
this
so
about
archival
our history.
Of the 70s.
Yeah.
I mean, most of these are from the 70s, right?
Yeah.
Right. So you can get Sea Monkeys for $1.
Yeah.
And there's no website to go to.
Yeah. And the trying to get kids to sell seeds for prizes.
Oh, that's right.
Well, the back pages are as interesting as the comics itself. But
you read all of these? I mean, there's an entire
oh my god!
Box
I probably read them
the
all
studio.
30 times. So yes, we have everything from Captain America, Spider-Man, through the Twilight Zone and Star Trek and the $6 Million Man.
Oh, the $6 Million Man!
I know, right?
Oh, Wonder Woman.
Yep,
she's
Wonder
a
Woman.
Feminist icon, isn't she?
Definitely.
Yes.
And then I've got a whole bunch of Marvel comics, lots of Incredible Hulk,
the Hulk,
and the Thing, and Captain America, and Spider-Man, and
right,
and Superman, and I don't know, just all kinds of crazy.
And a lot
topics.
Of people have. Many of my favorite people have little collections of. Comic books.
Yeah.
And they covet them.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they're in plastic bags. And
well, that's what I didn't do. There's no plastic bags.
So tell me about the ritual of this. Did you go out on Saturday mornings and buy a new
It was my, yes.
Was it?
Yes.
Is that your?
Yes. Yeah. I was very fortunate to have, my mother agreed to allow this one indulgence.
Indulgence.
And so I got to choose. And I mean, I did, like a lot of girls at that age, choose Archie.
Yes.
But I also was very interested in other things.
Yeah, and because so, it's quite an eclectic collection. Yeah.
So, of course, Saturday morning, grocery shopping.
Yes.
Well, ballet lessons first, then grocery shopping.
Yes.
And then you get your comic book and then maybe even a pop. So, you know, that was a big deal.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, yeah, I was raised on that stuff.
Yeah. And we turned out okay.
We survived.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Richie Rich. That's my husband's favorite.
Oh, really?
Richmond.
Oh, of course it would be. Mm-hmm. Well, when
and that guy had some cash, eh? But again, it was iconic. So here's Richie Rich. I mean, I think the underlying theme of all comics is the rebellious nature, the ability to be a hero. You know, whether you're Spider-Man or Richie Rich or Babar or you know.
Well, and that's, again, I mean, the power in the comics we were talking about before we started, the political power behind the comic strip can be pretty intense.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not just a form of entertainment.
No, no, no. It is entertainment, but it's also journalism. Mm-hmm. It's like anthropology, almost like showing the passage of time and cultures. And
it's a historical record.
Yeah, it's definitely an art form.
Yeah.
There's also like a shared criteria among cartoonists of how things are drawn and
right
so the speech bubbles and
actually I have some fun information about for later about speech bubbles but just a quick little history. So speech bubbles seems to be the indicator of the first comic strips really. And what they were, well, way back, Mesoamerican artwork shows these long wispy speech bubbles that have little pointers to a character's head that shows what they're saying. Mm-hmm. And you can find some of these examples just online from 600 to 900 AD. I mean, we're talking hundreds of years ago.
And even then it was accessible.
Yeah.
Right? So there's always people talk about high art and low art. I mean, that's a terrible thing to say about any kind of art, but it really is accessible, you know, short, snappy, fun. Yeah.
Well, and that's how it kind of grew is because of periodicals. Right?
Yes.
And so the first of the quickie little like 3-panel stories was really created back in the mid 1800s in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. So there was a teacher and caricature artist, Rudolf Topfer, and he published Adventures of Obadiah Oldbuck. Ooh. So that was really one of the first ones where it actually appeared in the more what we recognize as a comic strip format. Mm-hmm. And it inspired all sorts of new comic strip, comic artists, caricature artists to do the same kind of serial storytelling in 1, 2, or 3 panels.
Yeah.
And then the comics became a strip because of the newspaper printing, the way that they printed. They print them in strips at the bottom of the page.
Yes.
So that's why we call it a comic strip.
Huh. Well, there you go. At the bottom of the page.
Yeah.
And it really is. I mean, I know now as a grown up, when I was little, my favorite part was the funny pages.
Oh, yeah. The funny pages. See, were, used to be pages. Huge.
Yes.
And they're getting less and less now all
and
the time.
It was normally only on one day a week. And
Saturdays.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. And they're color in Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, such a luxury.
And then, so there, the storytelling format was just the little tiny 1, 2, or 3 panels format. And it, of course, the American and German artists were inspired. And then there was another big German artist, Wilhelm Busch, who started Max and, what was that one? Max and Moritz, which really then inspired that whole genre to really explode. So that by the end of the 1800s, we were going big time on comic strips and periodicals.
And then in the early 1938 was our Canada's favorite cartoonist was who? Anyone out there? Joe Shuster and Superman.
Oh, of course.
Yes, the man in tights.
The only guy on the planet that can wear tights and get away with it.
Exactly. But a lot of people maybe don't realize he was a Canadian.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, he didn't do it by himself. He had a partner. But yeah, so he is thought to be, that was the golden age of comics.
Oh, yeah.
With Superman, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And then, it expanded in the early 1900s, too, to be a more serial storytelling. Mm-hmm. And in fact, even the short comic strips, there were certain ones that became more serial dramas. Mm-hmm. And you remember, like, Sally Forth and Rex
Morgan. So you'd have to stay tuned for next week.
That's right. Like, yeah. It wasn't a contained story each week. It just went on and on and on.
Yeah, which would have been quite revolutionary at the time. What do you mean there's no end? Yeah. What do you mean I have to wait till next week, right?
Well, hence the comic book, mm-hmm. right? So the collection, like starting to put together the collection of these comics
yes.
into a longer story became mm-hmm. the comic book.
Yeah, Superman number one, Superman number two,
yeah.
right?
And then, oh my gosh, it just kind of went mad.
And I mean, I think it forms the basis of a television series now. And, you know.
Well, we get sucked into a story.
Yes.
And we get cliffhangers so that we tune in next time. Mm-hmm. It's not really just mm-hmm. for the sake of how we feel when we're stressed.
No, and radio serials and movie sequels. And
it's probably all to do with advertising when you think about it.
Keeping the interest level. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, but they're so, I wish, I put a few pictures on the Facebook page, but there's some really astounding, beautiful original art, and the tradition continues.
It certainly does. Now, so the other reason why I was inspired to talk about this on a show is because my kids are really into graphic novels, mm-hmm. and they're enormous. And in the teen section of the library, mm-hmm. you can find that probably a third of the entire section is dedicated to graphic novels. Mm-hmm. And these are everything from original series to just spin-offs of like Percy Jackson or the Twilight series. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of graphic novels that are based on characters that are known in regular novels.
Yeah.
And the kids are just eating them up. So I was thinking, man, that's just another expansion of the comic book,
Absolutely.
Really.
Absolutely. And it's saving some publishers too, because traditional book publishing isn't going very well.
Right. So just the printed word.
Yes.
That's a big shift right now with all the ebooks and everything. So mm-hmm. maybe having the artwork mm-hmm. attached to the written word.
Right. Yeah. The original multimedia.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, if only they were scratch and sniff too, that'd be three senses. because I grew up in a half English, half French household, I remember reading Archie. And I remember reading Richie Rich, but we would, for the most part, it was French or Belgian.
Oh, really?
Right? So Asterix and Obelix.
Oh, yes. Asterix is the biggest, the big French.
Yeah. I think he's French, Gascoigne. And he, so his characters were unlikely heroes, right? Living mm-hmm. in a small village. And in fact, Asterix and Obelix were the mascots of my middle school.
Really?
Yeah, it's so pervasive. It's everywhere, right?
Wow.
And our colors, and we had little hats like they had. And
was that like a trademark infringement or something?
I don't know. It didn't seem to matter then. And same we had orange, bright colors, orange and blue.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The silly little hats. And
oh, fun. Little,
used to chant their name. And it's a bit weird, but.
Yeah.
Yes. But that's how, you know, and then we would read the Smurfs, of course, Die Strumpf.
Yeah.
Which was great for vocabulary, because for little wee blue guys, they sure have a great vocabulary. and then also we would read, what else would we read? Oh, Tintin.
Yeah.
Of course. Adventure. 14-year-old boy gets to travel around the world and solve crime.
Yeah.
How fun would that be?
Well, yeah.
With his dog.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's funny because that's that's kind of the nature of all great teen novels.
Yeah, they're unlikely.
It's very young people that discover they have some ability or talent and get to go off without their parents
exactly.
and be a hero.
Yeah, yeah, because you never see his mom or dad. I don't think so. Well, the captain, but he wasn't, right?
Of course, the Charles Schulz famous Peanuts series.
Oh, I know. Aren't they lovely?
Yeah, they
also,
are.
No grown-ups.
Oh, yeah. I just thought it was funny that there's a funny guy on YouTube that does the Charlie Brown School of Dance.
Oh, fantastic.
Have you seen that? It's hilarious.
Do you have like dust coming out from under you?
No, but you've got all these dance moves that are demonstrated in the Christmas special, right?
Cool.
The Charlie Brown Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got like the Ruby Slipper Vulture Shuffle.
Yes.
Where, you know, you're doing the head bob and then there's the self-breast exam. That's what Lucy's doing. And it's hilarious.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway,
I gotta look
he says in his intro that he's He's willing to teach unusually independent parentless children.
Yes, parentless children.
It's because it seems like children in all these comic strips have no parents.
No parents.
No home to go to.
I know.
They just seem to take care of themselves.
And in teen literature in general, like Pippi Longstocking. I'm sorry. Yeah. She had a house. She had a horse. She had a balloon, like a hot air balloon.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And she took out, I don't know, she was always up to saving something, someone from something.
Yeah.
Nancy Drew.
Yeah, Nancy Hello. Drew, the Hardy Boys.
16 years old, had her own car, would go out at night and solve crime. Like, what? That's not hilarious. Safe.
I know. Where's the mom?
But she had, you know, a trench coat and a purse, and she was all set to go. I was just, I love it. And I mean, I guess that's what, for teens, that's what it's about, is exploring this independence,
yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And then some comic books, like my kids are 10 and 12, and they're just recently into, but they read the classics like Superman and Spider-Man. And right.
Oh, they'd probably like my Incredible Hulk ones.
I bet you they would.
Yeah,
very much.
Captain America and all that.
Yeah, and I think the comic book stores are making a comeback.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think that because like any art form, sometimes...
The pendulum kind of...
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes you look at it and realize, holy, we're not paying enough attention to this. And then some people do some fantastic new things with the same...
Same characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the same format, the same materials, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it comes back into vogue. So
yeah.
we are seeing that.
Yeah. We went, when we were on vacation this summer, we went to several comic book stores. And seriously, for $2 or...
Oh, I know. It's actually
right? That's
pretty good
the
deal.
Other, but you know, the price point's important.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
That's part of the lesson of comic books is you can deliver content in a cost effective manner and then
the big news recently in the comic book, the new comic book industry is the death of Archie.
I know.
Yeah. Like that was big.
Yes. Huge.
50 years he's been kicking around in high school.
Well,
he was in college by
he's
that
He's the
time.
Oldest high school college student ever.
Yeah. But they gave him a hero's death.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go. Even though Archie was kind of a bumbling, you know, a guy fly by the seat of your pants kind of dude, all of his existence, he died a hero in the end.
He was a hero managing all those.
Well, yeah.
Betty, Veronica, Jughead. Hello. That's hard work.
That's true.
Yeah. He was a good friend.
So sayonara, Archie.
That's right. So maybe we can talk a little bit about the actual art. So there are these sort of standards across the board, whether or not you're in, you know, it's a North American commercial comic or something a bit more, you know, like the French ones or my personal favorite is Mafalda. She's a 6-year-old girl, who lives in Argentina, and the storylines are all about equity, equality, feminism, politics. I mean, it's really deep.
Yeah.
Stuff, but she's adorable and she, you know, sticks it to you.
Yeah. And this is one of the ways that you can really make very strong opinions known without being this opinionated journalist.
Yeah.
Right?
And so grown-ups, of course, read them and there was a lot of messages in there. Some of them were controversial and the cartoonist got in a bit of trouble because I don't think Argentinians or the name of the country is Argentina?
No, Argentina.
Argentina. Okay,
yes.
Sorry. I only know it in French.
You're so French. L'Argentine.
I don't, you know, that wasn't always the easiest place to live either.
Yeah.
Right?
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, but there's all, there's these similar techniques across the board. Like I've heard often that cartoons, comics only have 3 fingers.
Oh, interesting.
That just seems to be a industry standard.
Don't give them that 4th finger or else bad things will happen.
Yeah, so every time I read one, I'm like, oh, look, only 3 fingers. Right? So there's all sorts of things like that.
Well, I think what caught my interest is all the speech bubble
stuff.
I think that's hilarious.
Yeah.
So with the origins of the speech bubble being way back in Mesoamerican time, you know, it did sort of continue to evolve. But there was early on, there was a comic strip called The Yellow Kid. And instead of this, just a whole statement being part of this long, wispy speech bubble, this kid had all of his, what he was saying on the front of his shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of an evolution from that to having the little individual, like dialogue,
yeah,
rather than a statement, right? So, but anyway, so there's some very common speech bubble formats, yes, that you should follow, mm-hmm, when you're a comic artist. Mm-hmm.
Because they say different speech bubbles, they imply different,
exactly,
tones.
There's,
right?
A universal language, yeah, just with the line, mm-hmm, never so, mind the words.
And so I mean, I would even go as far as saying those speech bubbles were the beginning of our emoticons.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
You know that Archie's irritated about something, depending on how thick the line is.
Yeah.
Right?
And if it's bigger, bolder letters.
Yes.
So, okay. So here's a few common speech bubbles. So yeah, there's thought bubbles, mm-hmm, which have the little, you know, puffy cloud,
yes,
sort of look about
them. So you're not saying it. You're just thinking it.
Just thinking.
Yeah.
And it's for characters also who don't speak, mm-hmm, like Garfield and,
yeah,
Odie.
That's
right?
True.
They got to say something,
they
but they
speak,
don't speak.
Do they?
So those thought bubbles are used for them.
Okay.
There's scream bubbles.
Scream bubbles.
Which of course is like a jagged line, mm-hmm, like a big starburst kind of, yeah, thing. And that implies that they're yelling
and
shouting.
That reminds me of Batman. Kapowie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's broadcast bubbles, mm-hmm, or otherwise known as radio bubbles. And that is when
the little
pointy thing that points to the thing that's saying it is a jagged line like a lightning bolt.
So like if you were, the characters are listening to the radio and,
yeah,
this just in.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Then it would have that little lightning,
yes,
bolt.
Of course.
That's a broadcast
thing. Right, right.
Yeah. I know it's like,
and they're all, these are iconic symbols.
Absolutely, yeah, they're used all over the world. Mm-hmm. And then there's the whisper bubbles, which,
yes,
of course are drawn with dotted lines,
little dashes. Yeah, yeah.
And then there's icicle bubbles,
ooh,
that have the sort of drippy icicle thing at the bottom, and that means that you've said it very frostily.
Oh, frostily.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah, because you're angry or icy, hmm, right? And then there's monster bubbles.
Monster bubbles.
Yeah, and that's where it has big drippy things hanging off,
yeah,
of it, or blood dripping off of it.
Ooh.
I know. Well, ooh, hey, monster comic books, check it out. There's
that's
drippy,
right,
things all over. And then, of course, just the standard colored bubble, mm-hmm, where if it's a certain color, it's green with envy, it's red with anger, mm-hmm, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about portraying, mm-hmm, the emotion of the speech.
Yes.
Emotion of the dialogue.
Yeah.
And it's done with line, with,
yes,
art.
Exactly. And I know that for in marketing sometimes, I'll be looking at ads in the paper and I'll see them trying to mimic the comic book style with their kapowies and their new sale, 50% off. And I'm like, it's not a comic book.
No. And right? Don't yell at me.
Yes, please don't yell at me. Please. It's not polite.
Yeah.
So- but even the type treatment, like, you know, this really predates the, typesetting machines.
Yeah, and you're such a font snob.
Yeah,
I thought you'd be interested to know that when a certain character entered a certain like an unfamiliar situation, like,
yes,
for instance, a goth person would enter a regular kind of, you know, Wonder Woman storyline, then all of a sudden his speech would be using black letter or something,
ooh,
right? Because it would be this gothic Germanic kind,
yeah,
of speech.
Mm-hmm.
So they used fonts as an art form as well. Way back when.
And the other thing that strikes me is it's all caps.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and there's the font that's Comic Sans, right?
Yes.
That lots of people use because they think it's informal looking, but it's its own.
I mean,
you kind of have to almost leave it alone unless you're actually drawing,
oh, yeah,
comics.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Don't go there.
But they're all caps. So as there's this whole system of design that is incredibly effective regardless of what story you're telling.
Yeah.
Right? Or who your audience is, or.
Yeah. Because you got lots of breaking the format. This is something that artists have to do all the time.
Yeah.
In order to keep your eye moving from something to another thing,
mm-hmm,
you have to break the format and create a pathway, mm-hmm, for your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So comics do this all the time where they have zigzag sort of things between panes, you know, where a little jagged line almost implying that the passage of time,
mm-hmm,
or that this happens suddenly, mm-hmm, right after that thing, or else their box, their little, not the dialogue, but the statement box, would actually break the format of two panes,
yeah,
in order to sort of imply, okay, meanwhile.
Yes, exactly. And it's very, the way the information is laid out is incredibly complex.
Yeah.
Right?
A lot of information,
yes,
in a small space.
Yes. And so you're not really sure. I mean, what amazes me is even kids who aren't, say, quite in tune to what's going on here, they can follow the story. They just know intuitively this. First we read this, then we read this,
yeah,
then we read this, you know?
Yeah.
And it isn't always obvious, but I think the key to a good comic is you tap into how people process information, and then you're able to do it in a way, right? So we tend to think it's fluff and entertainment, but it's incredibly complex.
It is.
I think so.
It requires a great deal of skill and training and experience to do to lay out a good comic strip. Never mind the ability to draw a great character and to create a great story.
Yeah. And then,
so really, it's very multi-dimensional.
Absolutely. And I mean, most of this would have been done, you know, a lot of this would have been hand drawn.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And typeset, which would have taken forever. But
Louise is getting sucked into Wonder Woman right now. You can tell any minute she's going to fall Wonder silent Woman. And just start reading.
You know, and then to marry those two things, the image and the dialogue, like, do you have to figure out what they say first? Or draw them and then figure out what they're saying.
I know. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems so complex all of a sudden. And I'm flipping through going, oh my God, like, you're right. Mm-hmm. They're so complex. And the composition of each pane is beautifully managed.
Yeah.
So they're each pane is thought out so carefully that they must have to, I mean, it must take hours and days and months to really work out something. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you think about, say, you know, that cartoon For Better or For Worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she lived in North Bay where I
really
grew up. I think she moved there after I left, but she would do one a week.
Ugh.
A week?
Yeah.
Well, so can you imagine what an entire, so this isn't one guy. This is probably a team of people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And apparently there was a team of people doing Archie too.
Oh, I would imagine.
Yeah. And there were some people that were better at Archie than others, but they were all instructed to draw him a certain way. And you could definitely tell if you were an Archie fan that certain ones were drawn by somebody. And
I would imagine.
Somebody else.
Yeah.
And you always felt like there was the more real Archie and the more cartoon Archie.
Yeah.
Because there's just the different drawing styles. Huh. But there had to have been like 20 odd people drawing Archie for years because they were pumping him out.
Yeah. And now it's all digital, of course. But
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's still some. Of course, they'd have to draw some, but it all gets scanned and digitized. And,
yeah.
So,
but there's still some artist working away in a little booth somewhere.
Yes, I hope so.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Well, they're still apparently continuing on with Archie's storyline in another way, in some other capacity, but not like Archie himself in the regular storyline has gone.
Mm-hmm.
He has left the building.
He has left the building. Okay. Oh, Yosemite Sam.
I know.
Oh, we like him too because we have a Sam.
Oh, you do?
Yosemite Sam.
And that one's in really good shape too. And I got Yogi Bear.
Yeah.
And Buck Rogers in the 25th century.
Oh, Buck Rogers.
It just about is the 25th century.
I know, right?
We'll have to deal with some of the advertising that we see on the back here when we come back. And then I've got lexicons.
Lexicons?
Yeah, yeah. I love that part. Oh. Lexicons, words that come into our language
But
get developed by people. Well, there's a whole bunch of really cool ones by this guy that wrote a book. One of the things I found out when doing a little research was that a fellow by the name of Mort Walker wrote a book about the lexicon of Comicana.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and what he did is he wrote a tongue-in-cheek article quite a few years before, like in the late 60s or something or whatever, it couldn't have been that far back. Gosh, I don't know. I'll look it up. Anyway, he wrote about Grawlixes. Grawlix. This is the word that he created referring to the series of symbols that to be used in place of profanity.
Oh, okay.
So when we write like a little number sign and sign and
An exclamation point.
Instead of actual word.
Oh, those are called
Grawlix.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so he wrote this long article, like all academia about it.
Oh, right.
Just to be funny.
Yeah.
And it really caught on and Grawlixes became the word. That people used. And so he wrote a whole book in 1980 about the lexicon of Comicana. So he created all these words and I just love them. I have to give you some examples. Okay. So agitrons are the wiggly lines around a shaking object or character. See, this is important for us to know, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we're going to see these now all over the
everywhere.
Place. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because they probably became very common after. Blurgits. A blurgit is a curved line preceding or trailing after a character's moving limbs.
Oh, so to show that there's motion.
Yeah. A briffet.
A briffet.
Is a cloud of dust that hangs in the spot of a swiftly departing character or object.
Like when,
you know, the little poof of dust and then the straight lines. And then there's dites, diagonal straight lines drawn across a flat, clear surface, like windows or mirrors.
Oh, okay. That's right.
Yeah. Emanata. Those are lines drawn around the head to indicate shock or surprise.
Can you see them around my head?
Yeah, I
didn't know there were all these. Did he make these up?
He did.
Wow.
He just totally fabricated them. And they've become like comic artists all over the world use these terms. They talk about the, it's just part of the lexicon. Mm-hmm. Heights are horizontal straight lines that trailing after something moving with great speed.
Okay.
So you get the little cloud, so
like
of
the
dust,
road runner,
right?
And the coyote. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you get the briffet, mm-hmm, followed by the heights, which are the horizontal lines to indicate
that's
the speed.
Right. Wow.
And then an endotherm,
yes,
is the wavy rising lines that indicate steam or heat.
Or heat.
Or if the same shape is used to denote smell, then okay, it's called a wafteron.
Oh, a wafteron. That's awesome.
Oh, okay, this one I like too. Leucoflect.
Oh.
Do you know what a leucoflect is?
Sure. What is it?
A shiny spot on a surface of something depicted as a four-paned window.
Hmm. You know? Okay, sure. Like, yeah, I've seen those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like on a character's
I have all these
head.
Cartoons running through my
I know,
head.
I know,
now.
I know. Yeah. I know. I keep seeing them in mm-hmm my head. A plude.
A plude.
Plude is flying sweat droplets that appear around a character's head when working hard or stressed.
Oh, I see. Like when yeah Jughead's eating all those hamburgers.
Yes. And then discovers that he was supposed to save six for his friends.
I know, right?
Yeah. Soul rads. This is obvious to me. Radiating lines drawn from something luminous.
Like the sun or a light bulb.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Quimps.
Quimps.
Quimps. Planets.
That'd be a great Scrabble word.
Yeah. It's a real word now.
I know.
You could use it.
I know.
It's probably worth a lot of points,
I bet,
too.
Yeah. Triple
so
score.
Quimps are planets resembling Saturn that omit obscenities.
Oh.
Can you imagine that? Can you visualize that? I'm trying to think of an example of that, too.
Not really, but
I think this one's my favorite.
Okay.
Squeens.
A squeen.
Squeen.
Yes.
Like S-Q-U. Squeen. Little starbursts or circles that signify intoxication, dizziness, or sickness.
Okay.
That you saw in Archie a lot.
Yes, a lot. Yeah.
And then there's, and then the last one I have here is vites. So like heights that are horizontal lines, vites are the vertical straight lines indicating the reflectivity, like vit, up,
oh,
right?
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
He likes to think about the bouncing ball. It's really easy,
yes,
right? How we all do that. Or I don't know if your kids do this, but my kids, when they were first drawing scenes, action scenes, that's what they would do.
They would.
Lines behind objects that
yeah
were moving.
Yeah.
So.
It's true. It's very, very fundamental to their drawing when they were little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the best way to indicate movement.
Yeah, like,
motion.
This is the car going.
Yeah.
Or this is the train stopping. Or,
yeah, yeah. So in that way, like, caricature art mm-hmm has influenced our very development mm-hmm in the art world. Mm-hmm. That's how, it's a phase we go through.
Well, I think it's quite primal. Again, it's, you know, back to drawing on caves.
Yeah. The original comic
right
books.
And the original, the fact that the usually the first sort of learning we do is crayon to paper.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When art is beautiful and free.
It's true. And no rules.
Yeah. Okay. So here's a couple of other, I got a Beetle Bailey.
Beetle Bailey. Boy, yeah, he was kind of a clumsy dude, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But that's the other thing. I think we could often see, recognize in the characters, the strong ones and the weak ones, our own kind of personality.
Exactly.
Right?
The character.
You know, there's
Dimension or the, you know, yeah, seeing ourselves and our families yeah and our friends reflected in the characters.
And there's this new form of therapy called literature therapy.
Whoa, what's
so
that?
So you meet with a therapist and they recommend certain books to read to get you through certain events in your life.
Wow.
Yeah, it was on Sunday morning, Michael Enright's show on wow CBC. I mean, I think it's a couple years old, but or maybe last winter sometime. But
yeah,
I think so for kids, you know, I bet you,
there's
a lot promise of comfort and refuge found in reading, mm-hmm, you know.
Yeah. And I remember,
like, Clark Kent didn't always have it so easy.
Well, exactly, mm-hmm, right? It's true. The challenges they face and overcome, maybe it's very inspiring.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And I know it was.
Spider-Man was kind of just a...
Well, he's a kid.
Yeah.
He's just a kid.
Yeah. He well, wasn't like the most popular dude in school.
No, no. And all these other little tiny ones like Casper and,
yeah,
and Wacky Witch and, oh, you know, I those like guys Casper were very, very young.
Yes.
And so it shows that you can be very young and be trodden on mm-hmm and still come back strong
and, still
and,
come
and
back
save
strong
the day.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Still save the universe.
Yeah.
Right? I guess maybe we all want to save the universe somehow, right? Well,
of course we do. Yeah.
And
we
I all wonder how, so these artists in their time, you know, it must have been frustrating to not be, well, maybe they, I'm sure they didn't do it for the the fame, but they probably didn't always get the respect of their peers.
No, and right? In fact, I was just reading about Sam Waterston, the guy mm-hmm. that draws Calvin and Hobbes.
He's the best.
I know, right? I know. Calvin and Hobbes are my favorite. After the Far Side.
Yes.
Far Side actually is my
favorite. Oh, yeah, that's up there too. I think Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he was, I just read a little article about how he was working in an advertising agency and unhappy and just, you know, doing other people's bidding.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he had his kid, I think his wife went off to work and he decided to stay home and be mm-hmm. the stay-at-home dad. And that's when Calvin and Hobbes was born.
Yeah, and Calvin and Hobbes, I mean, in history are philosophers,
yes,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, from the get-go, it was very...
Yeah. And it's a highly intelligent... And in fact, lots of people, because it's such an intelligent strip,
mm-hmm.
lots of people were very upset when he retired the strip.
Yeah.
But he wanted it to be, to kind of go out on a high note. He didn't want them to just linger and mm-hmm. repeat storyline mm-hmm. and be the perpetual...
What's your... My favorite... I love when Calvin... It's like when they're talking about elections, and Calvin always says to his dad, your polling numbers are not very good today. Your polling numbers in six-year-old boys are lower today. Like, he was just so insightful. There's been that whole series with the disturbing snowmen.
Yes.
I don't know why, but it's like one
and
of
the snowman army.
Yes. Yeah.
And just the huge philosophical discussions that they would get into just mm-hmm. while they were tobogganing down a hill. Mm-hmm. So brilliant. Mm-hmm. My mm-hmm. gosh. Very inspiring.
I have them at home. I leave them out sometimes thinking the boys might try, but they definitely like the snowmen.
Oh, yeah.
So disturbing.
Yeah.
Oh, and Susie Durkins. Well, she's a piece of work. Remember her?
Yeah, I know, but he was so mean to her.
Oh, gosh. Awesome. There's all these little feminists in the comic books.
Yeah, yeah. Survivors too, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So anyway,
Betty, Veronica.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other topic because mm-hmm. if you start looking at the female character in the comic book series, I mean, we've gone from, the skimpily clad, scantily clad. All hips, no waist, lots of mm-hmm. breasts,
mm-hmm.
To some actual serious butt-kicking heroes,
mm-hmm.
heroines, mm-hmm. maybe. Yeah. So I guess, you know, there's been evolution in the feminist movement, too.
Yeah.
Within the strips.
That's right. Oh, I just think it's great.
Yeah.
And I think it's great for kids. Now, Unplug and Play mm-hmm. is coming up.
Yes.
So a lot of emphasis on getting your kids to sort of disconnect from the wired world.
Yeah.
Or the wireless world. And reconnect with these, you know, the real play. Now, so there's lots of activities, curling, skating, tobogganing, hiking, but to me, comic book reading should definitely be
a big thing, because I think that Literacy Week is the time to sort of understand the big role mm-hmm. that literature plays in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's all about kids unplugging mm-hmm. for that particular series of events, which is wonderful, there's mm-hmm. lots of exciting activities, but that should be a real focus mm-hmm. to find other ways to read and entertain yourself mm-hmm. when you're sitting quietly.
And as I say, at the teen level, you know, they might not. I know my son is like, Mom, do we have to do Unplug and Play? Yes, we do have to do it, you know?
Yeah.
It's
funny because it's a different world. We don't understand their world.
No.
Right now, their world, it's normal mm-hmm. to be on a device, to have the computer mm-hmm. on. It's just normal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's huge for them to unplug.
So what could we do with these comics? Maybe they'll be at the gallery?
Well, maybe they can be at the gallery.
Yeah.
Unplug and Play Week, we have an event. We have a bookmaking day.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, on Family Saturday. So that's on January 31st, mm-hmm. I think is the last Saturday.
Maybe you can make a comic.
Maybe we could. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'll have some of these there for people to look at.
To read and look at.
Comics from the 70s.
That's right. And reacquaint ourselves with.
We'll get all kinds of 40-year-olds coming in. And
yes.
Like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
I remember those. I know.
Well, it would be a great opportunity to kind of, give new life to these, because they've been in a box a long time.
Exactly. And it's all about storytelling and weaving a narrative
and
finding in fiction the strength to be the people that we want to be should be.
It's the best combination of art and literature.
Absolutely.
The best.
And so highly skilled.
Yeah.
And commercial, right? So it checks a lot of boxes.
It certainly does. And then speaking of commercial, before we go to our break, it's we're looking at some of the funny advertisements
in here.
Oh,
on the back.
And of course, there was the standard Sea Monkeys and the...
Did you ever buy Sea Monkeys? I so wanted to.
I bought Sea Monkeys.
You did?
Yes.
I think
finally, after probably so many years, maybe my mom got tired of hearing me say, let's get Sea Monkeys. And so we finally ordered
them. And
then
you cut the thing out and carefully spell your name.
Yeah.
And send it in an envelope.
Yep. Yeah. It was big. And it was probably like $2, which is probably a lot of money, right?
Some serious coin in there.
So it turns out they're just shrimp.
Okay.
You know, and they died within about 3 days. Aww. But that's normal. It says right on the package when you get them. Yeah, they're not going to live long.
But they're sort of creepy. The mama shrimp and the dada shrimp and the baby shrimp.
I know.
And there's smiles and the mom has like a bow in her hair and lipstick. I thought that that's what it would be like.
I think a lot of kids thought that they were going to look like that. And of course, they're kind of naked.
Ooh,
so that's
so
a weird
eager
thing.
To please. They can even be trained.
Yeah, trained to come to the surface for the food.
Blah. A bowl full of happiness.
Yeah. Okay, well.
Sea monkeys.
A bowl full of happiness.
And then there were, okay, so the other big thing about that era was the toys, action figures.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So here's one for Build the Stars of TV's Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that show?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Well, and I've got a $6 million man bionic transport and repair station that you can buy
bionic
here.
Bionic man.
So you can, if you already have a bionic man action figure, you could get his repair station here.
Because I kind of had a crush on the bionic man.
Yeah, he was actually pretty awesome. Yeah. So.
And then an advertisement for the movie Orca.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one?
I do. And it must
have opens
been
in July at a theater near you.
Yeah. Well, it must have been huge because it's on the back of a lot of these comics.
Must have been.
Those people spent a lot of money in marketing.
And then you could, all sorts of things.
Yeah. And you could get posters or t-shirts or iron-on transfers.
Ooh.
Yeah, like keep on trucking.
Keep on trucking. So we're going to keep on trucking here.
And now.
As the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
Now, normally, we have some interesting little tidbit from the art world, but today's dramatic moment is so unbelievable and so horrendous.
Yes.
It is about the massacre in Paris at the satirical newspaper. How do you say this?
Oh, Charlie Hebdo.
Charlie Hebdo.
Yeah. So Charlie Daily.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the only, what comes to mind is these journalists who are also artists, you know, did what they believed in.
Mm-hmm.
And took a risk, obviously. Knew they were taking a risk every day.
Yeah.
But when, you know, it was political satire, right? And I think the dramatic moment is more about how, you know, they always say, don't shoot the messenger. Well, we're shooting messengers now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and why is it we can't foster a society where we get along better with people we don't get along with. Just, you know, I mean, as angry as we are about the massacre, there are people who are equally angry enough to actually do this, right?
Yeah.
So, but there is, you know, this history of political satire was not, it's not unique to that magazine. I mean, it goes back thousands of years, right?
And in fact,
some of the major revolutions of our time have been as a result of political satire.
Yeah.
Whether it was illustrated or written or...
Yeah. Right? It's powerful stuff.
Yeah. I mean, these are manifestos in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're a bit hidden, right? Mm-hmm. You can hide a little bit behind the character that you've drawn.
Yes.
And then you're not standing up on the soapbox making yourself a target.
Yeah.
But you're still able to say things. And this is the part of this free speech. Free speech is such... like when I was talking to the kids about it one day, I was, you know, it's such a funny topic because you don't really want to say, yeah, you're allowed to say anything you want about anybody,
no,
right?
It's
not about that,
mm-hmm.
but it's still a right to be protected, that you have a right to say your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, but printing your opinion is different than saying your opinion.
Yes.
And, you know, like there's lots of, it's a very
libel
gray
and,
area.
And, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's a bit scary.
Libel, so, slander. I mean, these are all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you take political satire and its long history in well, angering.
Well, it's everywhere. People. It's in literature. It's in art, of course. It's in theater. I mean, William mm-hmm. Shakespeare yeah. was a political satirist, if you want to look yeah. at it that way, mm-hmm. right? And so it really is about tolerance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do we do that? How do we sit back and allow the free speech, allow the rights of everybody mm-hmm. and not feel anger about what somebody says or draws about our beliefs?
Well, I don't know. How do you do that?
I know.
It's also music, like mm-hmm. so many people have been put at risk for sharing their point of view. And I guess it's just a personal commitment to, I will listen to your point of view. I might not like it, but I'll certainly give you permission to have it. Mm-hmm. Right. But it, you know, and people feel attacked. Like today was an attack on, journalism. And even if it was a forum that maybe not everybody agrees with, and yeah. it's true there, you know, it was particularly satirical, I guess, would be the. And even CBC today has said they're not going to run any of the.
No.
Right?
No.
Because it's too offensive.
Because there's a line, mm-hmm. right? And so everybody has their own line in the mm-hmm. sand that they're drawing. And lots of organizations have mm-hmm. drawn the line at anything that satirizes the Islamic mm-hmm. religion.
You know, and art isn't about pleasing. Sometimes it's about offending.
Yeah, but right? I mean, but it is getting a bit interesting just mm-hmm. to know that they're specifically censoring themselves on Islamic
yes.
commentary
yeah.
because of the risk of mm-hmm. backlash. Mm-hmm. So that's a bit frightening.
Yeah.
And I mean, Tony Blair says in his, you know, statement this morning in Parliament, this will not stop us from protecting the rights of free speech
nope.
to everyone.
And it can't.
No, it right? can't, but it's still, and then right after that, CBC makes their statement mm-hmm. that they will not be
yeah.
Showing any of that.
Or even the nonsense about the interview that the movie with
yeah.
Seth Rogen and
yeah.
about North Korea. Yeah. And I mean, it wasn't even a good movie.
Did you see it?
No.
Oh.
But I mean, that's what I'm hearing.
But it would be a Seth Rogen movie, yeah.
Yeah. And for us to, like, death threats and hacking and, you know, heightened security alerts mm-hmm. and theaters not being able to show, right?
Yeah.
Over a movie that isn't even that good.
Yeah. But, you know, okay, this was my first observation when that whole story broke, when they canceled the release and everything, is that if North Korea had a movie industry and they made a big movie about the assassination of Barack Obama
yeah.
and used a character that looked exactly like Barack Obama
yeah.
and showed these bumbling characters assassinate him.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder how the Americans would react.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Well, I bet you they would do something a bit more undercover.
Yeah.
Be quite so. They do a lot of undercover things.
Yeah. I just mean that I don't think the Americans would be like, ah, yeah, everybody's got their right to free speech.
Yeah.
I think that would be quite offensive
That's
to
true.
Them.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
And I guess it's about how much offense do you take?
Yeah.
Maybe we take a little bit less offense. I don't know.
And at what point does taking offense have to translate into action, mm-hmm. right?
You can take offense without taking action.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm. Ooh, yeah. That's the thought of the day.
Is it?
Yeah, okay. I like it. Take offense.
And there's
without
so many
action.
Examples, like so you talk about political satire, like television show Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
This hour has 22 minutes.
Yeah. Well, and remember how Rick Mercer's really fantastic series, Talking to Americans,
yes.
had to stop after 9/11
oh.
because we couldn't, you know, actively make fun of Americans' lack of knowledge of the world while they were under such a horrific attack. So,
and yet there's so much. I mean, I think there's the two most important things to me as a human being are humility and humor, mm. right? So humility means, okay, I don't know everything. Go figure, right? Mm-hmm. And so it makes you thirsty for more. But humor really is so important to make you think of something in a different way,
yeah,
right?
And yeah. And it diffuses.
It totally diffuses, absolutely.
Yeah.
And there has to be. Find some humor today because, you know, there's not much humor in Paris, I'll tell you that.
No.
Right?
No.
But, and talking to Americans, it was all about exploring the difference in the cultures in a humor in, you know,
yeah,
using humor.
Yeah.
And we need that.
We right? do need
like,
it.
Congratulations, Canada, on adopting the stapler. That was my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember that one. But
he'd say, well, we adopted the stapler this month and or this week. And so they had people saying, congratulations, Canada, on adopting the stapler.
Well, I remember him going to Harvard and asking if people knew about the building of the Peter Mans Bridge. And then, did you hear about this massive bridge, the Peter Mans Bridge? This is a big controversy in Canada. They're like, oh, yes, yes, it's terrible. It's yes, terrible. They shouldn't
but
build such a thing.
But don't you think that the people, like, they weren't being punked. I mean, they had to have known adopting the stapler.
I don't, honestly. I,
right? I'm, and so maybe we take ourselves too seriously.
Yeah.
Right?
It was so great. Yeah. It was such a great series.
It was a great series.
But and it's exactly for that reason, because humor is so valuable for us to be able to take the information and process it without becoming angry or frustrated or, you know, emotional in other ways and move on to the next thing. Because we do have very challenging lives, very complex lives. Mm-hmm. Let's laugh and move on to the next thing.
If we're not willing to accept that, hey, maybe this isn't the only way. Maybe this isn't the only point of view. Maybe this isn't. Maybe my views, there's room for other people's views along with my own, right? I do really think we're very earnest. We take ourselves very seriously. Mm-hmm. And it's not just in one faith. It's in a lot of faiths, you know?
Oh,
and it's
absolutely.
In a lot of, even atheists take themselves a bit seriously, right? We just have to find some wiggle room, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess the political satire as a form of art.
It is an art form and an important art form.
Yes, I was just going to say that. It's an important part of this equation of making sure we can take ourselves that little bit lighter and not be so intense on our beliefs.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure those journalists and artists who died today would not want us to be afraid. They would not want us to stop. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, here's to them.
That's right. Here's to them.
For protecting that. In all of us.
That's
okay.
Right.
I think we have time for some local events.
Yes. So there are, it's 2015. We have many
and it's
exciting
January.
Plans. I know it's January and it's foggy and a little bit icy out there.
And And people are, sometimes people are a bit evented out, you know, like because of all the Christmas concerts.
Yeah.
I was talking about recitalmas before Christmas.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like I had 5 recitals in 8 days to attend.
Wow.
Yeah, I only have 2 kids.
These last 2 snow days are kind of nice, kind of downtime.
That was very interesting.
Yeah.
First snow days in Kelowna in 35 years.
35. And I think it was 22 here or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then.
I think that was the universe's way of saying, okay, we'll take a couple more days.
And yeah.
Chill out. Yeah. Literally chill
Chillax.
Out. Yeah.
So, yeah, we do have a kind of a hiatus of events for a little while.
Yeah,
but there's
typically in January, the show opens.
Oh, yeah. Our show, the gallery, later, the show
the
opens
gallery.
Later in the month. Yeah. Like we have the annual members exhibition every January that we usually open in the third week. So this year, it's Friday, January 23rd is the opening for A Game On.
Mm-hmm.
It is an exhibition of works inspired by sports and recreation.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
And isn't it the UN year of sports and recreation?
Is it really?
I think so.
I didn't even know that.
I'm gonna look
we
that
usually
up.
Think about we try to kind of go back and forth between a really quite a specific theme and then really open, wide open general theme. But this year we just thought, what a great way to show that the arts sector are not a bunch of separate people. That these people participate in other sectors, and sports and recreation is a big part of living in the Shoe Swap. And most artists that I know are part of other activities and groups.
Yeah, we
and
don't just sit in studios and paint all day.
That's right. No. So there are soccer stars, there are kayakers, there are hikers and mountain bikers, and there are hockey players and speed skaters. And I just thought it would be fun to show the other things that we do in our active time.
Yes.
Yeah. So I finished my painting because I'm submitting
for
this show.
Oh, good for you. Oh, yeah. I can't wait.
I did a portrait of my family.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's my engineer husband.
Yes.
And my 2 girls skiing.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. It's just their backs. but we were at Sun Peaks over the holidays, and it was so beautiful up there. I had to do a painting. I just finished it yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we do have a jury that's separate for this exhibition, and people have to register in advance for that. And the jurying happens early in the week.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the show opening on the 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
But there are lots of other events. So the Shoes Up Theater is having a Theater 101.
Oh, great.
Yeah, they have.
Yeah, January is a good time to learn new things.
Well, it's true. Yes. And so they're doing a open day on, oh gosh, I'm actually not sure of the date.
I don't know.
One of the Sundays in January. Yes. We'll have it on our Facebook page, mm-hmm. or on our website. Learning about lighting and set design and production. And
oh,
stuff.
Cool.
I know, that's fun. Well,
and speaking of light, I was wrong. It's just in. It's the International Year of Light and Light-Based Technologies.
Oh, okay.
But there's something about fitness. Maybe it's the Canadian government. I don't know.
Maybe every year should be the year of fitness.
Yeah, it should be.
Get every off, January.
January.
Yeah. Yeah. Shoveling the snow may be a good fitness tip for the
I
day.
Oh, yeah. I did that yesterday.
Yeah. Everybody had sore backs. And then, of course, the Film Society launches their season again. And then they have their film festival in February. So that kind of helps get people excited, right? That you can go and watch like an entire 8 days of movies.
Awesome.
Yeah. I think that's what winter's all about.
Mm-hmm.
That's what gets you through skiing and movies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Skiing and movies.
It's true. So more information can be found on our website at www.salmonarmartcenter.ca, and click on the participate page for a date listing of all the events coming up.
And Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year. And join us again next week on Artscape. I'm Tracy Kutchker.
And I'm Louise Wallace-Richmond.
And we'll see you next week
in the funny pages.